But the trouble here is that science does not teach things spiritual, and their reasoning powers must be based very largely upon what their senses tell them to be true, and these senses can only learn what naturally comes to them, which necessarily is of the material. As a consequence, men discard entirely all things spiritual which they cannot understand and thus render impossible any development of their soul qualities, except that they do realize the great qualities of their natural love and, in many cases, develop it, and in that way gain a progress that does help them in their condition of light and happiness both on earth and here. Well, as you suggest that you are tired, I will stop, but will soon come and finish my communication. Yes, and I am glad that you feel that way about it. You have many spirits here who desire to write, and some of them are such elevated and wise spirits that I feel that their writings will benefit you more than mine. Yes, I'm with her quite often, and she is a wonderful spirit in love and wisdom, and has such deep and wondrous knowledge of God and His love. I almost adore her, and feel that if I had not met her I probably would not be where I now am. I tell you, I am thankful that I came to you that night. Yes, I see your wife quite frequently, and she is a wonderfully beautiful and happy spirit, and makes so many other spirits happy by her goodness and help. She is a very positive spirit as well, and she lets nothing stand in the way of her work and mission. So, my dear friend, I will say good night and God bless you, Robert G. Ingersoll. I am here, your grandmother. Well, my son, I come tonight, as I promised, for the purpose of writing you a letter, telling you of a certain spiritual truth that I desire you to know. I am now in the third celestial sphere, as I already told you, and am in a much more exalted condition in my knowledge of spiritual truths than I have ever been, and have opened up to me a spiritual view that increases my understanding of truth and of the question of the Father's provisions for the happiness and salvation of His children. I know now more than ever that He is a real existing God of love and power and wisdom, and that wrath, such as is taught in the Bible, is no part of His nature, and that He was for His children on earth as well as in the spirit world, only love and solicitude and sympathy. He is not a God that is afar off waiting for the arrival of the great judgment day, in order to approve or condemn His children according to the deeds done on earth. But He is with all men and spirits in a way that His influence of love and beneficence may be felt by them, if they will only place themselves in that condition of receptivity of soul that such influence may be felt. For, as we have before said, the relationship and nearness of God to man depends, to a very large extent, upon the will and desires of man himself. 331, The Paget Messages, 1916. God is not, in what may be called His personality, with men as has been taught by the teachers of the religions of the Bibles of the world, and men do not live, move and have in Him their being, as St. Paul wrote, for His personality has a location which is not everywhere but in the high heavens. I know that this will appear startling to many persons, orthodox and otherwise, and that it apparently takes from them the consolation of believing and feeling that God is with and in them, but, nevertheless, what I say is true. He is not in the more in nature as some of the scientists who believe in God say. He is not in every flower or tree or other manifestation of His creation. And, as regards His personality, is not omnipresent, though He has a knowledge of all things which He created. I say which He has created, for there are some things which appear to man as a part of the realities of the universe, which He did not create, but which man alone created. And for these things is no love and does not approve of or favor their existence, and in the end they will be destroyed from the face of His universe. And when I say that God, in His personality, is not everywhere and not with men at all times forming a part of their being, I do not mean that it shall be understood that He is not the loving watchful Father, trying to make them happy and save them from the results of their own many wrongdoings, for such inference would not be true. And while, as I say, He is not with men in this personality, yet He is with them in the sense and truth, that His attributes of love and wisdom and knowledge and power are with them always. Life emanates from God, but life is not God, it is only one of His attributes conferred upon the objects of His creation, that they may live and grow and fulfill the designs of their creation, and when that purpose has been accomplished, He withdraws from them this attribute of life, and men can realize that fact. God has not, himself, ceased to be a part of that object, for he never was a part of it, but only this attribute has ceased to be a part of the object. God is the source and origin of all life, but that life is merely one of his creatures, as we say, as is man or other things which mortals call matter. Man does not live and move and have his being in God, but merely in the attributes of God. So you see, not all these attributes together constitute God, for he is a personality from which all these attributes flow. I know that it is difficult for you to comprehend the full purport of what I intend to convey, but you may, in a way, grasp my meaning. Love is a greater attribute than even life, but love is not God, just as love is not man, though it is his greatest possession when it exists in its purity, and as man has many attributes which altogether do not make the man, so God has many, and yet they are only parts of his nature and not he. Man has a physical body and a mind, and yet they do not constitute man, for he may lose them both and still be man, or spirit, that is, the ego. The soul is the real man, the personality, and all the wonderful parts of man, such as the mind and affections and desires and will, are merely of him, and if he were deprived of any of them, he would still be man, though not the perfect man as when they are all with him performing their proper functionings. And man is so created that, unless he has these qualities, which in his creation were made parts of him, and which were necessary to make him the perfect creature that he was, while he is still man, yet he is not the perfect man that God decreed him to be, and until these qualities are fully restored or regained by him, he will not be the man that was the greatest handiwork of the Almighty. And God is not God by reason of having these qualities, but these qualities exist, because they are the attributes of God. He never loses them, nor do they become hidden or cease to do their functioning, but always are they existing and working and obedient to his being. God is soul, and soul is God, and in this soul does his personality consist without individuality, but real and existing, and life from which flow all these attributes of life and love, etc., of which I have spoken. God is spirit, but spirit is not God, only one of his qualities. I write this to give you some additional conception of who and what God is, and to show you that he is not in man, nor does man have his being in God. To further show you that God does not and could not exist in the same place with those things which are not in accord with his nature and qualities, and were he in man nor man in him, then no sin or error or things which violate would exist. I must stop now, but it will come soon to finish my message. With all my love, I am your grandmother, Anne Rollins. 332, The Paget Messages, 1916, February 19, 1916. I am here, the spirit of one who died a great many years ago in a far distant country, and when the truths of Christianity were known and practiced by the followers of the Master in the purity in which he taught them. I was a disciple of his, but I am not known to history, and like a great many others who lived in those days, I worked in a humble way among the poor and simple of the earth. My work was mostly in the country outlying, but close to Palestine, and I was one who received from the spirit world the communications of those spirits who had lived on earth as Christians, and these communications were received in our public worship and interpreted or made plain to the common people by those teachers who had the gift of interpretation. It was such communications as these that John referred to when he advised us to try the spirits to learn whether they were of God, or in other words, to learn whether they were spirits who had knowledge of the Christ doctrines, and who came to teach us the truths as they saw them to exist in the spirit world, and who were followers of the Master. I know that Jesus taught the new birth and the divine love, and the re-bestowal of the great gift which had been forfeited by our first parents at the time of their disobedience. I also know that he never taught us to look upon him as God, or that any death that he might die would save us from our sins or bring us in atonement with the Father, or that the Father demanded any sacrifice in order to satisfy his wrath or pay any debt that man might owe to him. No, the things last mentioned were not embraced in our faith or understanding of what the truths of the Master's teachings were. We also had the wonderful powers which Jesus possessed in the way of healing, casting out evil spirits, etc., and we never looked upon them as miracles, but as the result of the exercise of the powers which came to us when we received the divine love and had the faith which made this love and all that accompanied it, things of real existence. Jesus was always a man of love and mercy and benevolence, and never tired of his great work of doing good to the mortal, but these works were merely subordinate to the other great mission that he performed. Above everything else, he was a teacher of the Father's love, and the necessity of man's receiving this love in order to become at one with the Father, and an accepted child, whose 333 inheritance was immortality and heaven. So you can readily see what a departure there has been from our teachings and faith and practices, and the lives of simple followers of the Master. Now I see that belief in the dogmas of the Church and mysticisms of God are what constitute the Christian, and soul development is little preached, or really understood, either by preacher or people, and the real secret of man's salvation has been lost to the world. I am now in the high celestial spheres, where the love of the Father is most abundant, and the spirits of men live in eternal happiness, with the knowledge that immortality is theirs. I will not write more tonight, as it is late and you are tired. But before I stop, permit me to say, that you are receiving the revelation of the true religion of Jesus, as well as truths which pertain to the condition and existence of the spiritual world, and the celestial heavens. So with my love and blessings I am, your brother in Christ, John, the lowly follower of the Master, John Yorking. I was a Jew, I am here, your true Helen. I will write only a line, as it is very late. I never saw him before, but he was from the celestial spheres, for he was a wonderfully bright and developed spirit, and had the love shining forth from his countenance to a wonderful degree. I have no doubt that he is whom he represented himself to be. Good night. Your own true and loving, Helen. February 25, 1916. I am here, your grandmother. I come to resume my discourse if you think that you are in condition to receive the same. Well, we will try, and if I find that you are not, I will stop. As I was saying, God is not in man or material things as regards his personality, but only those attributes of his, which men generally consider to be God, are manifested in the material things. As I have said, God is not the creator of all things that appear to have an existence, for many things which control and govern the conduct of men are entirely the creatures of man, and are not in harmony with the laws of God or with his will. And hence, when it is realized that there exists in the souls and minds of men evil that are not in harmony with God's creations, you can readily see that God cannot be and is not in such souls and minds, nor are his attributes, because, as is said in the Laws of Physical Philosophy, two things cannot, the Paget Messages 1916, occupy the same place at the same time, so we may say as regards spiritual philosophy two things cannot occupy the same soul or mind at the same time, especially when they be antagonistic or opposed to each other in their qualities or fundamentals, until the one vacates its occupancy the other cannot come in. And this is invariably true of the creatures of God and the creatures of man, for they are always and under all circumstances opposed to each other. But it must be understood that when I speak of the creatures of God, my meaning must not be taken as including God, for he as the Creator is altogether different from his creatures, and while his creatures or certain attributes may find a lodgment and habitation in the souls of men, in the minds of men and in the existence of material things, yet he, God, never finds such lodgment, and is never a part of such existences. He is as distinct from the creatures, or better probably, emanations of his, as are the thoughts and desires of man distinct from the man himself. God is in his heavens, and those heavens have a locality, just as the different spheres of the spirit world, in which spirits have their homes, have localities. And his locality is way beyond the highest celestial spheres known to the highest spirit, and towards which spirits are always progressing, and as they progress, the more and closer they come in contact with these attributes of God, which are constantly flowing from him. Even Jesus, who, as you know, is the brightest of all the spirits and the one possessing more of these attributes of the Father than any other spirit, has never seen God except through the soul perception, nor ever realized that God is in him or forms a part of him, and mistaken and deceived are men when they say or believe that God is in them or that in him they live and move and have their being. To believe this as true, God can only be a kind of nebulous something, inconsistent as the air, and, as many of the spiritualists say, merely a force permeating the whole universe, divided into many and infinitesimal manifestations, seen and felt today and tomorrow having no existence. As something less substantial than man, weak at once and powerful at the same time, a contradiction beyond conception or explanation. Such is not God, but all these manifestations are merely evidence of the existence of a substantial and, I may say, never varying, self-existing being, who is not the creature of man's mind or of man's necessities or desires, but the creator of all, even of these wise men who cannot 334, conceive of any God, but nature, the mere creature of his being and wisdom and power. The human mind, when left to itself, that is to its own evolution as your scientists say, and not influenced by the revelations of spiritual truths or the suggestions of spirits who have advanced in knowledge of things beyond the material, has not improved much since the days when they lived and died as sun worshippers, and the worshippers of the sacred cats, and bulls and elephants, and of the storms, and thunders and lightnings. God was in all these manifestations, immanent and real, to be appeased or loved as necessity required. And today among your civilized nations, and the wise men of these nations, who can see no God in the spiritual, the aggregate of all these material things is the God, which they must worship, if they worship at all. Nature is God to them, and you see, that the only improvement, if any there be, that their minds have over the minds of the worshippers of the sun and of animals etc., that I have mentioned, is that those minds are not satisfied to see God in a single manifestation, but there must be a combination of all these manifestations, which they call nature. You see, it is only a difference in degree, and the scientist of today who refuses to accept or believe in any God, who may be of a spiritual nature, is exactly the counterpart of his so-called barbarian brother who could see him only in the sun, etc., in everything, except that he demands a larger God, who must be in the lowest form of mineral existence as well as in the highest form of solar excellence and even in man, for with some, man is his own and only God. And it is questionable whether these wise men are not more limited in their conception and acceptance of a God, than were the earlier uncivilized brothers, because many of the latter saw beyond and behind their sun God and God of thunders, etc., another and greater God whom they could not see, but could feel and in their souls realized his existence. But the wise men of civilizations have so evolved their intellects that they have lost their soul perceptions, and no God beyond the horizon of their intellectual perceptions can exist, and, hence, as they think they know nature, nature as all of the creation, and there can be no other God than nature. But, oh, the terrible mistake! God then, as I have said, is a being, a soul with a personality that is a location, high up in the heavens, towards whom all spirits of the celestial and many of the spiritual spheres are, the Paget Messages 1916, striving to approach in greater and greater nearness, and as they approach they realize and know the increased love and life and light that emanates from the fountainhead of these attributes of perfection. And so I repeat, God is not in man or beast or plant or mineral, but only are his attributes as he sees the necessity for their workings, and man does not live and move and have his being in God. Well, my son, I have in my imperfect way, given you some idea of who and what God is, and my explanation is in substance the consensus of the knowledge of the celestial spirits, whose knowledge is based upon the truths that no mortal or all the mortals combined can possibly learn with their finite minds. I think that you have received my ideas and words quite correctly, and I hope the truths which I have written may prove beneficial to all mankind. I am very happy and will come again soon, and write you some other truths, which may interest you. I must stop now. With all my love and blessings, I am your own loving grandmother, Anne Rollins. I am here, your father. I have been listening to your grandmother's message and was interested in observing the way in which you received it, for it is a deep and important communication of truth that is not generally known to mortals. We in the lower spheres, of course, do not know these truths so extensively as do the spirits of the celestial spheres, but I have heard the Master discourse on the subject of God, and what your grandmother wrote you is, in short, what he has explained to us, but of course, in a way that we could better and to a greater extent comprehend the truth than can you. There is one thing that I have observed in the case of these, who are called scientists and who believe only the material, and also in the case of those who claim to be infidels, when they come into spirit life. And that is, that very soon they realize that there is or must be a God, and that their God of nature, or their man-made God, does not supply the word, if I may thus express it, which they find to exist here. They, of course, do not get a conception of the nature of God in the beginning, but they know very soon after they come over that there is a God other and different from what they conceived him to be when they had any conception of him on earth and when they denied that there was any God, and they soon 335, realize the absolute necessity for the being one. And when they had made man his own God, they see many spirits of men in such conditions of darkness and suffering and helplessness that they readily realize that man is not God. So I say the first truth that enters their mind and souls when they become spirits is that there is a God, although they do not know his nature and attributes. So you see there is only one little veil of flesh between the vaunted mind of mortals that proclaim there is no God but nature or no God at all, and the mind conscious of its weakness and littleness as it exists in the spirit world. But I must stop writing on this subject or you will think that I am going to write you a lecture, which I don't intend to do now. With all my love, I am your loving father John H. Paget. February 27, 1916 I am here, Jesus, I see that you are not in condition tonight and I will not try, for I would not be able to convey to you my thoughts as I desire. We will have to postpone it until later. Well, you have been thinking about other things too intently and your mind is not in that condition of concentration on what I may write that is necessary. You have been reading today about the teachings of barbarism and the mysteries of Abdul Baba and you have not found that they are anything different from what you expected for they are based upon the writings of the Bible and of the Quran and of other so-called sacred writings. They will not benefit you particularly for they stress that the Prophet is as the writer says, the Ancient of Days, and does not know the real truths concerning God and man and his relationship to them. So I advise that you do not think more of these things but confine your thoughts to my writings. As I told you several nights ago, I will come sometime and write you in detail about this new cult in that Baba's Allah himself will come sometime. Strange as it may seem, he is not in the celestial heavens, but only in a high sphere which is inhabited by those who have equal development of the natural love. So stop thinking about these matters and give your thoughts more to me. I will soon come. So with all my love, I'm your brother and friend, Jesus. The Paget Messages 1916, February 28, 1916 I am here, Jesus. I desire tonight to write you on this subject, how a soul must receive the divine love of the Father in order to become an inhabitant of the kingdom of God, and realize that immortality of which I have written you. In the first place, it must be understood that the divine love of the Father is an entirely distinct kind of love from the love which the Father bestowed upon man at the time of his creation, and which man has possessed in a more or less condition of purity ever since that time. This divine love was never conferred upon man as a perfect and completed gift, either at the time of his creation, or since my coming to earth, but as a gift which is waiting for man's own efforts and aspirations to obtain, and without which it can never become his, although it is always close to him, waiting to answer his call. Then in understanding what this love is, and that man must seek for it, and what its effect upon the soul of man is, it becomes very important that man should make the obtaining of it the one great object of his aspirations and desires. For when he possesses it to a degree that makes him at one with the Father, he ceases to be a mere man, and becomes of a nature of soul existence that makes him divine, with many qualities of the Father, the chief of which is, of course, love, and also causes him to absolutely realize the fact of his immortality. Mere moral goodness, or the possession of the natural love to its fullest degree will not confer upon man this divine nature that I have mentioned, nor will good acts, and charity and kindness, of themselves lead men to the possession of this love, but the possession of this love in truth and in fact, will lead to charity, and good deeds, and kindness, always unselfish, and to a brotherhood of men on earth that the mere natural love cannot possibly lead to or cause to exist. I know that men preach about the fatherhood of God, and the brotherhood of man, and urge men to attempt to cultivate the thoughts and deeds of love and self-sacrifice and charity in a way to bring about the greatly to be wished for unity of life and purpose on the part of men, and by reason of this natural love can, themselves, do a great work in bringing about this brotherhood. Yet the chain that binds them together cannot possibly be any stronger than the natural love which forges it, and when that becomes overshadowed by ambition and material desires, the brotherhood will become 336, greatly weakened, or disappear entirely, and men will realize that its foundation was not built upon a rock, but rather upon the infirm sand, which could not sustain the superstructure. When the storms arising from men's ambition and desires for power and greatness, and many other material things, beat upon it. So I say, there is a great necessity for something more than man's mere natural love to help him form a brotherhood that will remain steadfast and firm under all conditions and among all men. So this natural love, under circumstances the most favorable to preserve the constancy of man's happiness and freedom from sin and error, proved itself to be not sufficient to maintain that condition, then what may be expected of it when circumstances are such that this love has degenerated from its pure state and has become defiled by all these tendencies of men to do that which is in violation not only of God's laws, but of everything that would otherwise help men to realize a true brotherhood. As I have heretofore said in my writings, there will come a time when this natural love will be restored to its original state of purity and freedom from sin, and when this brotherhood may exist in a degree of perfection that will make all men happy. Yet that time is far off and will not be realized on earth at all until the new birth and the new heavens appear, and in the meantime men's dreams of this great brotherhood will not be realized. I know that men expect that sometime, in the far distant future, by means of education and conventions and preachments of moral truth, this dream of an ideal brotherhood will be established on earth, and all the souls of hatred and war, and the oppression of the weak by the strong will disappear. But I tell you that if men depend upon this mere natural love and all the great feelings and impulses that may arise from it, to bring about this condition so much desired, they will find disappointments and lose faith in the goodness of men, and at times a retrogression, not only in that love, but in the conduct of men towards one another, and in the treatment of nations by one another. I have digressed somewhat from my subject, but I thought it best to show to man that his dependence upon himself, which is his dependence on this natural love, is not sufficient and adequate to bring him into a condition of happiness even on earth, and therefore totally inadequate to bring him into the kingdom of heaven. The Paget Messages 1916. The divine love that I speak of, is of itself not only able to make a man an inhabitant of the Father's kingdom, but is sufficient to enable him to bring about and realize to the fullest of his dreams that great brotherhood, even while on earth. This love of the Father's own self is of a never-changing nature, and in all places and under all conditions is working out the same results and converting the souls of men on earth, as well as of the spirits in the spirit world, into not only the image but the substance of the divine nature. It may be possessed in smaller or greater degree, depending upon man himself, and this degree of possession determines the condition of the soul, and its nearness to the Father's kingdom, whether the soul be in the flesh or in the spirit. Man does not have to wait to become a spirit, in order to seek for and obtain this love, for the soul on earth is the same soul as when in the spirit world, and its capacity for receiving this love is just as great in one place as in the other. Of course, on earth there are many circumstances and surroundings and limitations on man that prevent the free workings of the soul in the way of aspirations and faith that do not exist after man becomes an inhabitant of the spirit world, but, nevertheless, and notwithstanding all these drawbacks and stumbling blocks of the earth life, the soul of man may receive this divine love without limitations and to an abundance that will make him a new creature, as the scriptures say.